Numbers 22, from verse 1 to verse 35. Let's pray before we read. Father in heaven, we ask you to give us understanding not only of the meanings of these words, but of what your intent is for us this day as we read. And this we ask in Christ's name. Amen. Then the children of Israel moved and camped in the plains of Moab on the side of the Jordan across from Jericho. Now Balak, the son of Zippor, saw all that Israel had done to the Amorites. And Moab was exceedingly afraid of the people because they were many. And Moab was sick with dread because of the children of Israel. So Moab said to the elders of Midian, "Now this company will lick up everything around us, as an ox licks up the grass of the field." And Balak, the son of Zippor, was king of the Moabites at that time. Then he sent messengers to Balaam, the son of Beor, at Pethor, which is near the river in the land of the sons of his people, to call him, saying, "Look, a people has come from Egypt. See, they cover the face of the earth and are settling next to me. Therefore, please come at once. Curse this people for me, for they are too mighty for me. Perhaps I shall be able to defeat them and drive them out of the land. For I know that he whom you bless is blessed, and he whom you curse is cursed." So the elders of Moab and the elders of Midian departed with the diviner's fee in their hand, and they came to Balaam and spoke to him the words of Balak. And he said to them, "Lodge here tonight, and I will bring back word to you as the Lord speaks to me." So the princes of Moab stayed with Balaam. Then God came to Balaam and said, "Who are these men with you?" So Balaam said to God, "Balak, the son of Zippor, king of Moab, has sent to me, saying, 'Look, a people has come out of Egypt, and they cover the face of the earth. Come now, curse them for me. Perhaps I shall be able to overpower them and drive them out.'" And God said to Balaam, "You shall not go with them. You shall not curse the people, for they are blessed." So Balaam rose in the morning and said to the princes of Balak, "Go back to your land, for the Lord has refused to give me permission to go with you." And the princes of Moab rose and went to Balak and said, "Balaam refuses to come with us." Then Balak again sent princes more numerous and more honorable than they. And they came to Balaam and said to him, "Thus says Balak, the son of Zippor, please let nothing hinder you from coming to me, for I will certainly honor you greatly, and I will do whatever you say to me. Therefore, please come, curse this people for me." Then Balaam answered and said to the servants of Balak, "Though Balak were to give me his house full of silver and gold, I could not go beyond the word of the Lord my God to do less or more. Now, therefore, please, let you also stay here tonight, that I may know what more the Lord will say to me." And God came to Balaam at night and said to him, "If the men come to call you, rise and go with them, but only the word which I speak to you, that you shall do." So Balaam rose in the morning, saddled his donkey, and went with the princes of Moab. Then God's anger was aroused because he went, and the angel of the Lord took his stand in the way as an adversary against him. And he was riding on his donkey with his two servants, and his two servants were with him. Now the donkey saw the angel of the Lord standing in the way with his drawn sword in his hand. And the donkey turned aside out of the way and went into the field. So Balaam struck the donkey to turn her back onto the road. Then the angel of the Lord stood in a narrow path between the vineyards with a wall on this side and a wall on that side. And when the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, she pushed herself against the wall and crushed Balaam's foot against the wall, so he struck her again. Then the angel of the Lord went further and stood in a narrow place, where there was no way to turn either to the right hand or to the left. And when the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, she lay down under Balaam. So Balaam's anger was aroused, and he struck the donkey with his staff. Then the Lord opened the mouth of the donkey, and she said to Balaam, "What have I done to you that you have struck me these three times?" And Balaam said to the donkey, "Because you have abused me. I wish there were a sword in my hand, for now I would kill you." So the donkey said to Balaam, "Am I not your donkey, on which you have ridden ever since I became yours to this day? Was I ever disposed to do this to you?" And he said, "No." Then the Lord opened Balaam's eyes, and he saw the angel of the Lord standing in the way with his strong sword in his hand. And he bowed his head and fell flat on his face. And the angel of the Lord said to him, "Why have you struck your donkey these three times?" Behold, I have come out to stand against you, because your way is perverse before me. The donkey saw me and turned aside from me these three times. If she had not turned aside from me, surely I would also have killed you by now and let her live. And Balaam said to the angel of the Lord, I have sinned, for I did not know you stood in the way against me. Now therefore, if it displeases you, I will turn back. And then the angel of the Lord said to Balaam, Go with the men, but only the word that I speak to you, that you shall speak. So Balaam went with the princes of Balak. Am I not your donkey? We've had questions asked in the Bible by Satan, speaking through the serpent. Yea, has God said, you shall not eat from any fruit of the tree of the garden? We've had questions asked by God. Cain, why are you so unhappy? Adam, where are you? We've had questions asked by men. Cain, am I my brother's keeper? Now we have a question asked by Balaam's donkey. Am I not your donkey? Was I ever disposed to treat you like this before? Why have you struck me these three times? We've got two instances in the Bible of animals talking. This is the second one. Long and often observed, Satan used an animal called the most clever or subtle of the animals. A donkey is proverbial for its stupidity. And so God uses a stupid animal to rebuke Balaam the prophet. How did we get here? You know, I've always been kind of impressed with King Balak of Moab. He seems closer to understanding reality than most of Israel's enemies. He gets it. This is not just about military issues. This is about a spiritual issue. Israel has spiritual power. That's why they defeated the gods of Egypt. And so he wants to fight a spiritual power with spiritual power. And he has heard that Balaam up north, River Euphrates, when Balaam curses somebody, they're cursed. And when Balaam blesses somebody, they are blessed. And Moab is terrified. Balak is terrified. And so he sends for Balaam. And he says, Balaam, come and curse Israel. And then maybe with the weight of your curse on Israel and our armies together, we can chase Israel out of our land. Now, here's what I've always thought was the biggest mystery in this chapter. And it's not the donkey speaking. It's the fact that Balaam is in regular communication with the true God. And the Bible emphasizes this. This is the Lord he's speaking to. And if you see in your translation, it's all capitals. That means this is Yahweh. This is the God of Israel. This is the true God. How is it that Balaam, who is proverbial for being an evil prophet, how is it that he is in contact and speaking with the true God? That's always been my question in this chapter. I don't know the answer. I'll make two observations, though. One, the Bible nowhere teaches us that God only speaks to the righteous or to those he has called or to those he has saved. The Bible does not teach that. Where do we have clear evidence of otherwise? God spoke to Cain. God spoke to, in a dream, to Pilate's wife. Do you remember that? Jesus is on trial and God sends to Pilate's wife a dream. And she sends word to Pilate to have nothing to do with this righteous man. I suffered much in a dream on his account last night. God sent a dream to Nebuchadnezzar that is one of the most far-reaching dreams of God's intention for the future that we've got in the Bible. Daniel interpreted it. Nebuchadnezzar couldn't do that. God sent a dream to Pharaoh, ruler of Egypt, telling him the future also. God sent a dream to Abimelech, king of the Philistines, back in Abraham's day. I could go on and on. So, it is not the case that God is limited by us, even by evil in who he chooses to speak to. And it's not the case that God limits himself. So, God, for whatever reasons, has worked through Balaam, at least through him, words of truth. And Balaam is given, and we'll see this afternoon, more far-reaching and clear prophecies than just about anybody else, certainly in the first books of the Bible. It's just rather astonishing. Here's another thing I thought. Balaam is from the river. Now, you have to know what's meant here by the river. It's the river Euphrates. And we have a habit when we look at the map, those of you who look at maps, of looking at the Euphrates where it is about to enter and flow into the Persian Gulf. But the Euphrates starts way up in Turkey. And Haran, where Abraham came from, is way up there. If you look at a map, Haran is right on the border between present-day Syria and Turkey in the river Euphrates area. And Balaam is probably from up there. And if Balaam is from the same area where Abram and his family lived, there may be a little group of people, because Abram's brother knows who the Lord is. Abraham, he comes down to Canaan, but the family back there knows who the Lord is. It could be there is some connection back there for some generations back. Memory of God's appearing to Abram as to who this is. Anyway, Balaam is in communication with the Lord. And Balaam is also greedy for money. You might say he's the archetypical preacher who wants to get rich from his preaching. He says, you wait here, I'll go ask the Lord. And that night, the Lord says to him, Balaam, who's here? Balaam says, messengers from Balak. What are they here for? They want me to go and curse Israel. God says, you can't go, I've blessed them. Balaam goes down and says, I can't come with you, the Lord forbids me. They go back. Balak, who gets it? This is a spiritual issue. He thinks if you just offer enough money, you can get anybody to do anything. So he sends back a bigger and fancier delegation with a promise of more money. And what should Balaam have done when they came back the second time? He should have sent them on their way. One of the teachers I worked with had a sign that she had on her desk. It said, what part of the word no don't you understand? And when some kid came up and asked her something and she said no, and the kid would start to argue, fiddle, beg, and bargain, she would point to the sign and say, read it. And the kid would have to stand there and say, what part of the word no don't you understand? And then she would look at him and say, well... Balaam had his answer. No. You're not to do this. I blessed them. You can't curse them. No. And when they came back the second time, he should have simply sent them right on their way. People said, well, why did God tell him to go? And then he was angry at him. Well, parents actually do this sometimes with their children, and so do teachers. Kid comes back and nags and nags and nags, and you say, okay, have it your own way, but you're really annoyed with them. How many of you parents have done that? Do that? I remember doing it. All right, have it your own way, but you're really annoyed with the kid because they didn't take no the first time for an answer. So the second time, Balaam says, instead of saying, on your way, I got my answer, Balaam says, maybe the Lord has something more to say to me. That night, the Lord comes to him and says, all right, go with the men, but only say what I tell you to say. So in the morning, Balaam takes off. And God's angry with him. And you understand, he's angry with him because he already got the answer. And now, okay, you can go. On the way, the angel of the Lord appears and only the donkey sees it. So the donkey goes into a field to avoid the angel. Balaam hits the donkey back onto the road. And then the angel is in between two vineyards with walls. The donkey goes over against one wall, bashes the foot of Balaam on the wall, and gets by. Balaam hits the donkey. Third time, the angel's right there. You can't get by, left or right. And the donkey just sits down right under you. That would be really annoying, by the way, if you were riding the donkey. And Balaam hits the donkey and shouts at the donkey and says, if I had the sword, I would kill you, you stupid donkey. By the way, do you find it odd that he's talking to the donkey? You shouldn't. People who had dealt with animals used to talk to the animals all the time. It's not just talking to your pet. You're talking to your dog or talking to your cat. People would talk to the animals. They talked to the horses. They talked to the cows. They talked to the donkeys. They talked to the mules. And often never quite sure how much the animal understood. And then God opens the mouth of the donkey. I'm curious. I think a lot of people who own dogs and cats occasionally say, I wonder what that animal is really thinking. Right? And the animal can't tell you. Although we have a number of stories, I mean, everybody's aware of these stories, where the dog saves the life of the family, fire starts, family's asleep, the dog goes and wakes up the family, gets them out of the house. There are a number of stories like that where the dog or the animal, especially dogs, there are stories, much more aware of danger than the people are. And before earthquakes, for example, there are a number of such stories around. Am I not your donkey? Is it my habit to treat you this way? Now, our wonder is the donkey suddenly speaking. I've always liked the fact that Balaam is so angry at the donkey, he just engages in a conversation with him. Right? So the donkey says, why did you hit me? And Balaam says, because you have been making a fool out of me. And the donkey says, am I not your donkey? Have I been accustomed to treat you this way? And Balaam says, no. But of course, we react not to the message of the donkey initially. It's just the fact that the donkey is speaking. I looked up, just out of curiosity, I looked up last night parrots. Now, parrots are known because they can imitate human speech. So can parakeets, so can mockingjays. There are a number of birds that can imitate human speech. I've always wondered, is this some sort of remnant of animal powers that have been lost with the sin and fall in the world? I don't know. I looked up, one parakeet was known to have a vocabulary of 2,000 words. And there's still research by the psychologists. They're desperate to get inside animal psychology now, and they can't do it. How much comprehension is there? There's some evidence that it may not be just mimicry. It's not clear. If you've read the Narnia tales, you're aware of talking animals. It's in The Hobbit, that old bird, the raven, speaks and brings a message outside the cave there in the mountaintop. A lot of people have longed to communicate with their animals, and we can't. Here's a case where God opened the mouth of the dumb donkey. Now, I've thought before, and this goes back to my childhood, our interaction with animals is quite typical throughout human history. Here is our present interaction with animals by and large. We enjoy watching birds fly, and we enjoy the sounds of some birds, although not all birds. Crows are ugly sounding birds. And in the city, we get tired of pigeons. Squirrels. Squirrels are cute in little books for children. They are not cute when they get into your house. Mice. Mice are to be trapped by traps and gotten rid of in whatever way your conscience allows. Insects we fight and avoid and sometimes scream about them. We keep pets, rather limited number of pets, dogs, cats, gerbils, I was over at Bob Ullman's house. He's got this turtle about, seemed like about this big. It just wanders around the house. Really a fish, very few pets actually, but we do keep pets. Duren grew up with chickens in his backyard and can do a really good chicken imitation as a result. I spent my early childhood on a dairy farm, and it was very different. There was a mutual dependence between the farmer and the animals that is missing in our lives, and it's back the way things were for most people through most of history. He had horses. The horses pulled the wagon. They did some plowing. He made sure they had enough food and had medical care and a place to live. He had cows. The cows were to give milk. He would take care of the cows. And there was a bull. The bull's job was to, I love the term, freshen the cows once a year. There were chickens. Chickens were in a coops down below the farmhouse. As a little boy, I loved to go down there and chase the chickens and go into the hen house and get the eggs and bring the eggs up. And I was always amazed that they let me do that. I thought it was so much fun that they were giving up fun by letting me go get the eggs from the hen house. There were dogs. The dog's job was to bark at strangers. There were pigs. The pig job was to eat all the garbage and then get eaten. If you've read Babe, that the nasty cat tells the pig Babe, that's correct. That's what the pig's job is. And there was mutual interdependence between human and animal, all the way along there. The humans' approach to the animals was quite unsentimental. When the dog got old and was useless, you got rid of the dog. When the cow got old and didn't give much milk, you slaughtered the cow and ate it. The pig was for food. You didn't fall in love with the pig. Only in children's stories you fall in love with the pig. If an animal attacked a human, the animal was gone. My younger brother John, when he was 6, came back up from the hen house of tears and anger and announced that he'd been attacked by a rooster. And without any hesitation, I remember Mr. Millen, who was the old farmer, took John by the hand, took him right down and said, "Show me which one." I can't believe that John actually could pick out the correct rooster, but John picked out a rooster and said, "That rooster." Mr. Millen caught the rooster. We took it up to the chopping block. Off went its head. They do run around, actually. Then we got a pot of boiling water. We stuck the rooster in the pot of boiling water, loosened the feathers, took off all the feathers, eviscerated him. We ate him for supper. And everybody felt justice was done. All right. This is life on the old farm. The farmer took great pride in treating his animals well, within the bounds of what they were there for. So when the question was raised about milk from his cows, was it safe to drink without being pasteurized, he was quite indignant. His cows were healthy. He made sure his cows were healthy. This milk was safe to drink, and he didn't like being asked that question. So my mother never asked it a second time. And we drank the unpasteurized milk right from the cows in the morning. The Bible actually has rules about how you treat your animals. The most basic is in the fourth commandment. We recite it every week. You don't make your animals work on the Lord's day. Now, that's not an issue for us, because we don't have these kind of animals. But they weren't to set the oxen to threshing out grain on the Lord's day. You were not to muzzle the ox while he tread out the grain. The animal was allowed to be eating. And this probably especially applies to an ox that you rented from the neighbor, because they were pretty expensive, so not everybody had an ox. So if you rented the neighbor's ox and you could sort of maybe get a little more produce by muzzling the ox, so he couldn't eat and you send him back famished, but you'd pay for the rental. The law said, no, you can't do that. You can't muzzle the ox while he's treading out the grain. Proverbs has words devoted to taking care of your animals. Proverbs 12, verse 10. A righteous man regards the life of his animal, but the tender mercies of the wicked are cruel. There was a law that said if you saw a donkey that had been laden too heavy, that it collapsed underneath its weight, even if the donkey belonged to your enemy, You were for the donkey's sake to help him get up. Maybe you thought that was for the enemy's sake. I don't think so. As for the donkey's sake, help the donkey get up and take care of the donkey. And I could go on. The practical question. How do we obey all these laws today? Well, if you have pets, treat them kindly. Take care of them. We are wary, at least I am, of the animal rights guys who forget that we are made in God's image and that we have rightful dominion over the animals. Very wary of them. It's become an ersatz religion for some people in this country. But, when I read and see some of what is done in our industrial animal husbandry, it gives me pause. It's the same sort of pause I feel when I see a chihuahua. When I see a chihuahua, I say, it's just not right to breed a dog down to this little size. He's just no longer properly canine. Now, I know some people like chihuahuas, but it just doesn't seem to me right to do that to a dog. A dog should have a certain amount of size and dignity so that when he barks, he's got a little authority to him, right? And when the chihuahua barks, there's no authority at all. I just have the feeling this should not have been done. I have the same feeling when I see some of the places where the chickens are cooped up and where the steers are kept. And I have a sense, you know, God gave the earth to the animals as well. And there's something about the animal. See, I'm sounding like the animal rights people, aren't I? I know this. There's something about the animals running free before we kill them and eat them that seems to me in line with God's kindness and goodness. He cares for the animals as well as for people. And when I contemplate the destruction of all of the wild animal habitat, it does make me sad. It makes me sad to imagine it. Now, I know all the fight about snail darters and all the rest, and what's to be done? Handling these things legally with bureaucratic enforcement, our country has enough laws and enough rules and enough regulations. I just hate to have any more rules and regulations. But we had a little discussion actually in the session before we came out here. How do you handle a society where people have no conscience? How do you handle a society where people have no conscience anymore? If people don't have an internal sense of this ought not to be done, this ought to be done, so that they control and restrain themselves from what they could do, from what their power gives them to do it, then the only alternative is more laws and more laws and more laws, and sometimes they make things worse rather than better. So I'm rather sympathetic to at least the propaganda that says, what about how we treat the animals at this point in the great big industrial huge conglomerates that do a lot of the animal husbandry in the country? Are we doing right by the animals? The Mosaic Law said, treat your animals right. Balaam was not treating his donkey right. His donkey had saved his life. He'd beaten him 3 times. And the donkey says to him, why have you struck me? Am I not your donkey? And then God opened Balaam's eyes. Balaam now sees the angel of the Lord. You know, the Bible indicates that sometimes God has sent his angels for purposes to do his will, and he keeps us from seeing them. Do you remember the story of the king of Syria sending his army and surrounding a town where Elisha was in order to capture Elisha? And they wake up in the morning, and Elisha and his servant look out here, and here's the army surrounding, I think it was Dothan, surrounding Dothan. And the servant is afraid because he sees just the army. And Elisha says to God, open the eyes of my servant. And when he does, there's another army surrounding the king of Syria's army. And that's an army of God's angels. There's been a lot of sort of talk through the ages of children with guardian angels. Do you know whose idea, where this comes from? Jesus. Check back in Matthew. Do not these little ones have an angel before the face of God? After raising four boys who managed to make it to adulthood, and thinking back to growing up as three boys and we made it to adulthood, I am inclined to think that there is something to the idea of God giving, I don't know about girls, but at least boys, guardian angels, that they survive their boyhood. Putting the kids to bed some years back, one of my children came up with a way to get new stories out of me. He would ask questions. Tell me about when you were 12. Tell me about when you were 13. So instead of having my favorite stories, I had to think through and then come up with new stories. One night, the conversation was, tell me about all the times you almost killed yourself. And I said, well, there was this time. Oh, yeah, and there was that, too. And it was a good list. And then it was, well, how many times did John, this is not the oldest one, how many times did John almost kill himself? And we had a list just about as long, probably some things I don't know yet, of when he almost killed himself. Balaam was going to get himself killed if the donkey had not seen the angel and finally just sat down so as not to run into the angel. And then after God opens Balaam's eyes, the angel vindicates the donkey. Why did you strike your donkey? If he had not saved your life, I would have killed you. And then as the story goes on, Balaam says, I didn't see you. I have sinned. I'll turn back. And the Lord says to him, no, you go on, but you only say what I tell you to say. I've sort of taken the donkey's question as a plea from all animals. Treat us right. What that demands in each case is to be determined by wisdom and charity, but treat us right. That's part of piety, is we treat our animals right. And if true for animals, how much more true for people? So when the New Testament comes to the verse, you shall not muzzle the ox when it is treading out the grain, it applies it actually to taking care of the elders, and in particular the preacher. But I don't want to end on that note. I want to end on this note. Psalm 147, verse 6. Not the right verse. So I'll end on this note, and I know this is the right verse. The last verse of the prophet Jonah. Do you remember the last words of the prophet Jonah? I'll read you the last verse. And should I not pity Nineveh, that great city, in which are more than 120,000 persons who cannot discern between the right hand and the left, and much livestock. God cared about the animals in Nineveh as well as all the people there, and much livestock. We don't deal with animals like our grandparents did, but we should not forget we have a charge from God to care for the animals.